I think we all want to find love, but we don't ever talk about what happens after you find love.
Well, I feel like it goes back to that find love. It's like that find love versus create love debate.
Hi, I'm Yui Shu.
And I'm Julie Kraftchik.
We're active daters turned dating sociologists.
Here to dive into everything modern dating and relationships.
Welcome to the Dateable Podcast.
Before we get into this episode, a quick word from our sponsors that make it possible. By now, you've probably heard me raving about Osea. I'm obsessed with their Mega Moisture Duo, and I even caught my partner using it the other day because he smelled like seaweed. Now that's hot, right? You know who else would love Osea? Your mom, or your friends that are moms, or if you're a mom, because being a mom is hard work, and I think all moms deserve a spa day this Mother's Day. And what better way to make every day a spa day than with Osea's Mega Moisture Duo? And right now, you can even get an additional 10% off your first order with our code DATEABLE at OseaMalibu.com. Treat moms to the everyday spa experience she deserves with clean, vegan skin and body care from Osea. Get 10% off your first order site-wide with code DATEABLE at OseaMalibu.com. You'll get free samples with every order and free shipping on orders over $60. Head to OseaMalibu.com and use the code DATEABLE for 10% off.
Hello, friends.
Welcome back.
We are back for another episode of DATEABLE, in case you're wondering what this podcast was. We actually did just come back from a podcast conference called Podcast Movement, Podcast Evolutions here in LA. And Julie came down to LA for the week.
Yes, it was so fun to finally see UA's place. I still feel like a bad friend that I haven't seen it in 3 years, but I made it.
I think it's funny that you think you're a bad friend for not visiting. It's like not a thing for me. I don't think like I'm a good or bad friend for visiting anybody.
I know. I guess like it's so close. It's like other friends, like in other places, I just go when I'm back for family. I'm not like going necessarily to visit. But I feel like, I don't know, LA feels like it's like such a hop, skip, and a jump. Although I did get delayed like 6 hours coming back.
Yes, you did.
I'm like, this is a one-hour flight. This is why it's not that easy to come visit.
And it was cold as fuck and it was rainy on the last day. Like, couldn't have picked a worse week to be in sunny Southern California. But it was nice to spend the time together and also to go to this conference, which was solely dedicated to podcasts, something we've never done before. And definitely we learned so much. It was overwhelming.
So we'll be excited to test out some new things and, you know, put our learnings to practice.
There's so much to do, so much to do. You know, focusing our attention, though, back to dating and love, I guess. It's like this topic of love comes up all the time. In fact, at the podcast movement, love came up quite a bit in a meetup that we went to. And it's like, how do you define love? And then how do you get it?
Everyone's trying to find love, fall in love. Like, it's all like these like things that are more passive. Yet, you know, we're really excited about the episode we have today because it's a totally different look into how you talk about love, how you go about creating love. We've never heard before like this new model of love. You know, we've been just told we do things a certain way. It's like dating. It's just how it works. And this is how love works. And I love that we're flipping that and actually looking at like, is this the best way? And, you know, this is an evolving process. Like, we define what love means and what it does and how it works. And you all get to be here for this evolution.
No matter how you feel about love, in this episode, you're going to take away from it how you can create the love life that you want and why the traditional way of doing love is not working for us.
You know, we're starting every episode with just the question that we're all thinking. And what we wanted to uncover was, you know, do successful partnerships need more than love? We're told all our lives that love is all we need and everything depends on love. But is that actually true?
When you hear couples who break up or get divorced of like what happened, many times you hear that they say they fell out of love or the love was no longer there. Or I'm sure you've heard this whole thing of like, we were no longer in love.
Mm-hmm.
And it just makes you wonder, is that really the glue of a relationship, or do you need more than that? I think both of us can agree, yeah, you need more than love, but what is it that you need more of?
Right. And then you could argue too that you hear people say that I still loved my partner, but it was something else that didn't make our relationship work. Like, I know I've definitely had people that I truly loved, but it wasn't conducive to a long-term relationship and partnership.
Right. And that's really difficult, you know, because you think, oh, we love each other.
Yeah.
We're continuing to love each other. It's as simple as that. But relationships aren't that simple. And if they were just as simple as love, then everybody would be in relationships, right?
We've had this like debate of, do relationships take work? And like, what's the difference between work and effort and, you know, continued nurturing? I feel like it feels daunting to be like, oh, I need to do all this work on my relationship. But we've seen when you don't do anything, it just like peters out also. It's like, what's the balance that your relationships can still feel like a joyful activity and not work, but you're nurturing it and tending it.
What's also interesting is when you hear about couples who maybe didn't have love in the beginning and learn to love each other. A lot of arranged marriages are like that. I would argue a lot of Chinese relationships from my parents' generation are like that. They married for practical reasons and they learned to love each other over time. So then it begs the question, do you need love first to have a healthy relationship, or can you build the fundamentals and then find love later?
I also feel like love is such like an ambiguous word. Like, we're all looking for it, but like, what does it actually even mean? Like, I feel like sometimes when people ask me, I'm like, oh, I don't even know where to start. And we actually like put something out to our audience to define it. And a lot of people responded like, I'm not quite sure, or just didn't give as many answers as we typically get. And it's funny, like when you think about it that way, it's like what we're all striving for, yet no one can actually define it.
Yeah. How would you define it, Julie? Now that you just said you struggle with defining it.
I do struggle. Like, I want to go to, it's a feeling of like, you know, wanting the best for my partner and feeling like I can give to someone and they give back to me. But I'm not really sure if that like encapsulates all of it. Because I do think it's more than a feeling, but that's like what I go to. You know, I want to feel like safe and secure and protected and loved. Like, that's what I go to, but I'm really struggling putting it into the words. What would you say?
At this point in my life, I would say love is a choice in wanting the best for the other person.
Yeah. I mean, a lot of people wrote similar. We got a few responses. Love is a commitment to choosing your person over and over again. I like that. Love is wanting the best for someone, even if that's not you. The warm feeling when you think of someone, it's a feeling, it's a verb, it's a choice. Yeah. I mean, it's interesting, like this wanting the best for someone, even if that's not you. That's like a really selfless love. But then would you say like, you know, someone that is there in thick and thin, like doesn't feel that way, you know, like that's kind of an interesting take on it.
Right. Yeah. But it's, yeah, you're thinking about what's best for them.
Yeah.
What would that, like your example with a previous relationship where you truly loved this person, but I think end of the day, you knew that you weren't the best for each other.
Yeah, well, I guess that goes back to like, is love enough? Like, we had this whole episode we did with Mark Manson a few years ago. And I mean, ultimately, it's not. Like, that's really what it comes down to, is that's the connection, that's the chemistry, that's the fleeting part. But like, what is the more? And, you know, obviously, we were super excited when we got this email from Dr. Sara Nazarzadeh. And it was like, love by design. And that title just captured us. But more importantly, she put like the subtitle is six ingredients to build a lifetime of love. So we were really interested in what those are and how do you actually like build a sustainable love.
And before we let her, you know, talk about her book, we challenge you all to think about, what does love mean to you? How would you define it in this moment? And then what do you think are the key ingredients for sustaining love? Because we know love is not like the background music you play on Spotify. Like, it doesn't just always work. It's not ambient sound. You have to keep working on it to develop it, to grow it. What would you say are the key ingredients to develop love.
I think what I'm learning too, it's not an either or. It's not like you can't have love or like you don't need love. It's just you need love plus. It can't just be love only. And how do you love and how do you show that love? There's so much gray, but when we just say this blanket feeling of love, it's very fantasy-like or romantic comedy-esque.
Yeah, that's when the credits roll and then all of a sudden your life is perfect. No.
Yeah.
We know that doesn't work like that.
I still feel like the term falling in love is such a weird term when you actually think about what it is. Like it's like, you're so helpless. Yeah. I just fell into love.
It's like helpless and active at the same time. My goodness, why are you like falling? I'm scared of falling. Why are we falling into something? It's all almost like out of our control too.
Yeah. This is the only situation I think I can think of where falling is a positive thing.
Right. Yeah. But why? Yeah. Where did that term come from? Why do we have to hurt ourselves? Oh, yes. That's it. Because you will hurt yourself once you fall in love.
I mean, I think the creating love, I really like that. We've said this. We've heard other people say it too. It's not falling in love or finding love. It's creating love. And I really love that in premise because it just shows that like you have to keep making effort. It's not just a one and done thing, but it's not nearly as catchy as falling in love.
I guess it's not. Yeah. You'd be like, I'm creating love. I also like that this idea of feeling love, like you were saying, Julie. It's like if you know what love feels like, you can recognize it in other people.
Yeah.
It's like, right? It's not just finding it and you're not going to Amazon and clicking on 2-day delivery of
love,
healthy dose of love. You have to know what it feels like to receive it, but also to give it in order to recognize it.
Side note, that would be a really funny movie. Like if you just like had all these people clicking to like I could picture that as like one of the ones like at South By that we saw. That's like kind of, you know, not documentary, but a little more artistic, right? I could just picture people like clicking on the internet and ordering love and expecting it to just show up. There's something there.
I feel like it's happening though. It's going to happen very, very soon. You can order love on demand. I don't know what kind of love you're going to get, but you can certainly order it.
Okay. Well, speaking of love on demand, we're really excited that our Finding Your Person program is launched.
Yes.
It is live. We're running it only for this week. It will end on the 14th. We just love this program so much. And whenever we talk to people that have gone through it, the optimism and positivity of the people we're talking to, it's like contagious. And a lot of them were like, this is not how I started off before doing this. And you can tell that they've just gotten like a ton out of it and they're bringing like a different energy to dating.
We had calls with some of our members who've taken the course and they've said that they really resonated with getting rid of their limiting beliefs or recognizing limiting beliefs, knowing that you may be standing in the way of finding your person or understanding that there's an abundance out there and it's not just like there's nothing about your age, your race, your looks, your anything that's standing in your way.
I love when we talk to people because it always like makes me feel like, I guess, the warm and fuzzy of love at the day. Again, just we want to spread positivity and make people feel hopeful. That's at the end of the day what we're trying to do.
I mean, honestly, this worked for us. And this is why we rolled out with this program because we're like, more people need to know this.
Yeah.
Like if we were all just creating the love lives that we want, then this world would be such a better place. So this is our way of sharing our learnings. And like, seriously, this is what's worked for us all these years.
Yeah. So anyways, if you are wanting to join, you got 1 week to do so. And we hope to see you there. findyourperson.com. Cool. Okay. Other announcements at Dateable Podcasts. You can always find us there. Big Dateable Energy is our Facebook group. Come join us there too. We are also updating and starting to put brunch talk episodes on YouTube to have a more video podcast presence. So if you're not on YouTube already, feel free to come over. We love the idea that you can eat brunch with us, literally. Put us on your TV and eat brunch with us. Or if you want to just listen on your headphones and not see our faces, that's totally cool too.
We won't be offended. We're not offended. We won't know.
Do whatever works for you. It's just another way to reach more people and, you know, something that we're having fun with. Okay, before we get into it, let's take a minute to hear from our sponsors.
Confession, I have a secret about how I've been able to update my wardrobe with only high quality but affordable pieces these last few years. And now I have to let the secret out because they're sponsoring this episode. It's called Quince. Yeah, if you know, you know. Quince has premium European linen dresses, gorgeous washable silk tops, luxurious cashmere, and the best part, they're priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands because they partner directly with top factories. So no more middleman, and that's why it costs less to you. I know Julie got herself some nice cashmere pieces, and at only $50 a sweater, come on. And I recently ventured into home goods. I got myself some premium cotton percale sheets, ultra cooling, and just feels like a five-star hotel every night. And it's so perfect for the upcoming hot months. So get warm weather ready with Quince. Go to quince.com/dateable for free shipping on your order and 365-day returns. That's quince.com/dateable to get free shipping and 365-day returns. quince.com/dateable.
Did you know that an estimated 5 billion plastic hand soap and cleaning bottles are thrown away each year? Yeah, not great for our already struggling environment. That's why I'm so excited to talk about our partner today, Blue Land. Blue Land is on a mission to eliminate single-use plastic by reinventing cleaning essentials to be better for you and the planet with the same powerful clean you're used to. And the concept is pretty simple. You just fill your reusable bottles with water, drop in the tablets, and wait for them to dissolve. I literally just tried out the laundry tablet, and instead of having to bring my huge container like I normally do down the hall, I just brought the one tablet and my clothes came out so clean, just as clean as normal. I'm fully on board. It just makes my life easier and I'm helping the environment. And the best part, Blue Land has a special offer for listeners. Right now, get 15% off your first order by going to blueland.com/dateable. You won't want to miss this. blueland.com/dateable for 15% off. That's blueland.com/dateable to get 15% off. This episode is sponsored by Fleur. You know, on the show, we're all about finding you different avenues to meet new people and find the right apps for you, especially if you're the type of person who wants to explore your sexual side and desires a bit more. Fleur is a sex-positive dating app that prioritizes women's desires. Hell yeah. Sex is not something to be ashamed of. It's probably one of the most essential components of a relationship. Yet, especially for women, there's so much shame around the topic. So we love that with Fleur, you can explore yourself and your desires with other like-minded people. And that's the key. We love how open-minded Fleur is, whether it's for one-night stands, friends with benefits, sexting, no-strings-attached encounters, or long-term relationships. There are no forbidden desires, only mandatory respect and consent. So one of my friends tried Fleur the other day, and she absolutely loved how it felt more like a party than a dating app. She also found it fun to play the Fleur Sparks game, which is a card game in the chats that helps people on the app learn more about each other in a way that feels a bit more lighthearted and fun. So if you're looking for a new avenue that sparks passion or you just want to try something new, definitely visit Fleur.com or download Fleur in the App Store because pleasure awaits. Okay, let's hear it from Dr. Sarah.
The model of falling in love today is two people, or maybe multiple people if you're poly, but people get together and they merge as one. But we're going to talk about why this may not be sustainable for the long run and why there's a groundbreaking new foundation for love that is much more sustainable for the long haul. That's where our guest comes in. Her name is Dr. Sarah Nasirzadeh. Oh, I love just saying your last name over and over again. Like, it's so melodic. She's a world-renowned social psychologist, psychosexual therapist, and relationship expert, and the author of the book Love by Design, which is in my hands right now. If you can't see, because you're on audio, everyone, but I have it in my hands, I promise. Love by Design, 6 ingredients to build a lifetime of love. She's in her late 40s, lives in LA like me, and originally from all over the world, Tehran, London, New York, Palo Alto, and now LA. And she is married. Welcome to Dateable, Dr. Sara.
Welcome, Dr. Sara.
Thank you so much. Thank you. Thank you, guys. I can't wait to dig in and change the world one loving relationship at a time.
That is our goal, too. Wow. Yeah. We are so aligned.
Yeah. We've been talking about it. We just loved your book because it's such a different way to think about things. And, you know, I guess just from your perspective, like UA kind of alluded to it of just kind of merging together. What do you see as like the current way of being before we go into your new stuff?
Honestly, I feel like things are changing, which is optimistic. However, I still feel like people need a new framework, and hence these 2 decades of research and everything that I put together in one book. The gist of it is, I felt like if it's true love, if it's healthy, if it's actual love, that fuzzy feeling that everybody is looking for, it shouldn't be breaking your heart. Mm. It should actually give your heart a break. Mm. And I don't mean to be too poetic here. I can prove it with science. So this is important, right? So that's one. The other thing is, I sat with clients enough time around the world just to experience their pain, witness as what is it that they're chasing, and is it even real what they're chasing? So I had enough of that pain. And that's why I really thought that that submergent love model, the model that we are abiding by, and something that many of us grew up chasing, is not really working. So instead of submergent love, 1 + 1 = 1, finding the one and then becoming one with them, losing yourself into one another, how sustainable is that? Really not much. Then if we can't really flip it on its head, and thankfully, we can now have emergent love model that I'm offering to the world. And I'm really hoping that people listen to us with an open mind and open heart to be able to cultivate the love that they desire and deserve. And it's possible.
That term submergent, is that a term that's been around for a while? Or did you coin that?
Well, you know, as a person who speaks different languages, I allow myself to come up with terminology that exists or didn't exist or whatnot. So no, I came up with it.
And can you kind of describe, I mean, you said the 1 + 1, meeting the one and then becoming as one. Can you go in a little bit more detail what that really is?
Absolutely. Look, if you really start by the language that we use around love, especially we're speaking in English today, right? Imagine that in English language countries that I worked with, majority of people talking about falling in love, love is dangerous, love is sizzling, love supposed to be the one thing that you need for everything, love is the foundation for everything. One thing that we are really mixing up here is when we talk about love is that is spiritual divine love. Mm. That I agree with, loving many through one. I grew up with Sufism, so you know I completely buy into that model. That love is everywhere, love is within us, we are all the reflection of the source. I'm from that mentality. But when it comes to the love of building something together, building family, building a foundation together, sharing your finances together, emotional investments in one another, we're talking about a different love without changing the terminology. And that's problematic. So that's what I mean when we say submerge and love, the two people meet and combine all the resources and from time, energy, money, and attention, all that, and then going down and falling into something. Mm. It's as if you're falling into a trap without our knowledge. So that's what I call submergent love, as if two people are completely enmeshed with one another.
And you give this example in your book that I think put it into terms of this couple that just did everything together, was, you know, constantly they were each other's everything. And I've definitely used this word, like the moon, the suns, the universe, like all of it. And it is kind of what love encapsulates. But you said that it became problematic like years into their relationship. Why do you think that there needed to be another way? Like, what made you start to go down this path of there has to be something else that's actually better?
Well, you know, first of all, again, sitting with couples from across the world in pain. And also, I have to say, I'm a human living in this world too. So I had my own pieces of experiences with love. And, you know, with my husband, we were that couple, babes in the wood, you know, like finishing each other's sentences, completely submerged. And we felt like, oh, this is how you're supposed to be, right? In love. But then years down the line, we figured that that was not the case. So this was something that was not sustainable, especially as we immigrated to different countries, we lived in different places, we started building things, we had a child, you know, like all of those. Then we realized that, no, that is not how this is supposed to be. You know, we're not going to end up being fulfilled, and we're not going to feel each of us individually and as a couple thriving. So that was my story, right, that I go to details in the book. But going to that couple that you are referring to, that is just one sample of a couple that I've seen over the years. They come to me feeling disillusioned. They come to me feeling cheated by life, by everything that we were taught about love. They come to me feeling, well, I thought this was supposed to feel good. It doesn't. What happened? Where did I go wrong? Where did you go wrong? Maybe this is not the right person. Maybe this is not the right time. Maybe I'm not good enough. Maybe they are not good enough. So maybe the model is not working. So there's a lot of questions that nobody is equipped to answer for us even. So these were the things that really had me think, maybe there's another way to do it. And it should be beyond the anecdote of a person in a relationship seeking something better, or a therapist, or a coach, or a consultant. This needs to be evidence-based, and that became the foundation of the research of the two decades.
I'm loving this. It's resonating with me because thinking about how initial stages of love, the submergence is attractive. You do want to get into your own bubble and get to know each other and just be in this bubble, but then you have to go out in the real world. And you can't be submergent in the real world because there are other external factors. So I love this idea of coming out of this and breaking free out of that mold. But you've also seen this happen to couples where if you get too submergent, then you just want to survive. Let's just make it until the kids are out of the house, or let's just do it for the family. What have you seen that is a better alternative to just, let's just stick to it and make it?
Well, the better alternative, so if I can talk a little bit about the research that we've done.
Yes, right? Please.
So imagine that, first of all, there are 8 relational configurations that I'm introducing in the book. I would love for your listeners to walk away from this feeling free. I'm not going to put box around people, you know, another box, introducing another box. Remember, I say true love needs to set your heart free. Mm-hmm. So give your heart a break, not another heartbreak. Mm-hmm. One thing that I want people to know is that our research showed, fact showed, that everybody deserves to be in the loving relationship that they desire. We just need to make sure that they define it in a way that is realistic, and also it's based on facts and reality of life rather than just something that we are aspiring, that the idealistic form of love, right? So that's one. So the 8 configurations around love that we figured in our research were different ways that people make relationships for themselves. So for example, one of them I call friends with benefit. Friends with benefit are the people who
we're
would
familiar.
Like to-
oh, yeah.
Lovely. So, you know, people get together and they have agreements. Let's say, for example, we are travel buddies. You are my plus one into the parties that we go to. You are my emergency contact. You are my sex partner. You are my, you know, whatever partner. So there's an agreement. Usually those people come out of those relationships when one person decides, or both people decide, that that agreement is no longer valid.
Yeah.
That's the end of that relationship. Or it could go for a lifetime. And that's, you know, so that's one. No judgment around that. So around experiences. The second form that I introduce in the book is the one that I call contemporary couples. For people who are listening, if you imagine that each of you is a circle, so in the first model, that like the friends with benefit, 2 circles are standing alone. They have their own lives, resources, you know, all of that, and then come together around an agreement and experience. Second one, contemporary couples, 2 circles that are overlapping a little bit in the middle.
Okay.
So the overlap is this space that they are sharing of their time, energy, money, and attention. So imagine that middle sphere. A lot of people who aspire to be modern couples in monogamous, like a, you know, heterosexual, this very normative relationship, they aspire to that model that they say, okay, I keep a piece of me and then piece of the other person and then become in the middle with a shared space.
Mm-hmm.
One thing that I see in couples who abide by that model is that they're constantly negotiating around resources because there's this middle part that needs to be defined and boundaried, and especially as they go through life and they want to build something like children, taking care of the in-laws, taking care of older parents, pets, you know, whatever that is in the middle. So there's a lot of negotiation for these couples. The other category is submergent couple, that if you imagine that two circles are overlapping on one another, it's amazing to have this love bubble at the beginning, right? But if you stay there, there's a very good chance that you will develop codependency.
Mm.
And it can continue until one person feels smothered, nothing left of you, nothing left of the selves. And when there is no space between the two, what are you going to be attracted to? It's like tickling yourself. Is it funny? You know, it's like a two very much synchronized nervous systems. So it's that issue that we have.
The 1+1=1 that you referenced earlier, right?
Exactly. Thank you for that. Submergent love.
Yep. Okay.
The other one is leftover couples. In leftover coupledom, there are two very distinct groups that I've seen. One is the group that they have a lot of demand around their resources. And the resources, again, I define them as time, energy, attention, and money, right? So they have multiple kids or they have demanding jobs. They have to travel. They have other people or things to take care of. So they don't have much energy left, much resources left for the relationship. Whatever they get, they pour into that. So this is leftover. The second group in the leftover couples are the ones that are, they just believe that they have to keep independent lives and then give to the relationship whatever that is left. In this category, I see a lot of people involved, a lot of managers and nannies and, you know, a lot of people involved to keep that relationship functional. Now, the second category I call constitutionally bound couples. And for people who are listening, imagine that there are two circles within a larger oval shape that keeps the two circles together. So no matter what happens, if you are distanced from each other, no matter what happens, the relationship stays. Mostly you see people who have done a lot of, like, let's say, for example, religious couples. That's a very, like, you know, typical group that you keep the marriage together no matter what. There's a lot of emphasis on that. In new generations, I see that social media does that work for people.
Interesting.
So you create a lot of commitment to one another as a face of a couple.
Interesting. Right?
So no matter what, the face exists and remains and continues. So that brand of a couple there. And the other one is getting where you fit in. Unfortunately, that's so common, especially for dating people, that the other person that doesn't budge. They're not sharing of their resources. They're not going out of their way. They want you to fit in where you fit in, wherever you fit in.
I mean, it's so fascinating, like all the different ones. And then, like, I'm assuming emergent love is, I mean, I guess, like, there's pros, like, from what you've described, most of them feel like they're not set up for success. Is this kind of where you came in with emergent love? Like, this is the one that kind of works? Or do you see these other ways working also?
It depends how you define working, to be honest, because any of these, we saw that people are abiding by them. So, for example, the next one is parent and child or a mentor and mentee situation. That one person, it's usually there's a huge age gap or one person has a huge advantage over the other person, which is financial, geographical, immigration. Yeah. You know, you're with somebody for the immigration status. So that piece. And then the last but not least is the emergent love. The emergent love model, if people can imagine that the three circles, this is partner one, partner two, and the third circle be the relationship that they built together. So it's like a spark and log come together. In a conducive context, they make fire. That fire is the relationship. And emergent love is a byproduct of that, not the result, not the thing that we aspire to, right? In long run, if you want to have thriving people, thriving individuals, emergent love is the way to go. Because if you decide to invite other people into the mix of whatever quality, some people are polyamorous, some people are monogamous, whatever that they want to do, you know, that relational orientation, this is the only way that base can hold all of those rather than, you know, just being submerged. Where are you going to stack other people, right? So that's one. And the other thing is, each individual is thriving in their own right. And then the third entity emerges. So that's the model. Mm-hmm.
I think you had this really good visual in the book about a pyramid. So maybe that will help put it in perspective too. Because I think I'm understanding what you're saying. I think the part I'm still like, what's the difference between the contemporary where it overlaps versus like this new entity? So yeah, I guess however you could make that more clear for me, but also our listeners too.
Sure. If I can put the visual in place actually. So if you imagine the two circles representing the two people, in the contemporary couple, those two circles come towards each other and then share a space with one another. So for the listeners, I have my two hands as two circles, and then I bring them together as if they're intertwined with one another. There's a shared space in between, right? But in emergent love, those two entities are standing close to one another, the circles, with dotted lines that allows exchange between these two. And then in their exchange happens to create the third entity, that is that fire analogy that I mentioned. So there are three circles rather than two circles intertwined. Is that better, Julie?
Yeah, I think it's more, I guess, just like, why is that one set up for success where the overlap one might not be?
Beautiful, beautiful. Thank you for that. Imagine that I am me with the qualities that I have. Over a period of time, instead of being absorbed in you, I keep my boundaries lovingly and firmly. I know where I end, where you begin. And that's a big, big part of being in a thriving relationship. Within the skin that I occupy, my physical skin, right? This is where I reside. So in many coupledoms, that is the only boundary they have, the skin boundary that they have. They allow their nervous systems to regulate each other over empathizing. I give you a scenario as how this can go wrong. When we have that scenario that I don't know where I end, where you begin, you come from work one day and you are really tired or cranky or whatever, I've done something to bother you. You come home and then you start sharing that, this happened. Your nervous system is sizzling, is really, you know, all over the place. And then if I join you in that, in over-empathizing with you, if I'm not able to regulate myself before I show up for you, what happens is either I take over, I'm like, you are sizzling, you are upset, let me show you what I have, you know, like my nervous system is sizzling. Or I say, you're upset, oh my God, then I will start falling apart. Then who is there to regulate whom? Mm-hmm. And this is just a simple everyday example.
Yeah.
So what I'm offering with the emergent love is that I hold my own, responsible for my own, into me I see, what am I made of? And then I will extend an invitation with clear boundaries, into me you see. And that's an evolving process over time, rather than I'm trying to put it on you to figure me out. Just because you love me. Don't you love me? You should know me. You should do this and that for me. So instead of... myself doing the work.
I'm like, I right? definitely do all of these.
This makes a lot of sense. And I feel like it's overdue. Our love model is overdue for a facelift.
Yeah.
Because we are still very antiquated in the way we think about love and how love operates. But do you think that for emergent love to really take off as the next model for love, there are certain structural changes we need to make? Like, for example, I'm sorry, this is probably going to offend people. I still think it's ridiculous that women have to take the men's, or women still choose to take a man's last name when they get married. That to me is submergent love.
Yeah.
You are combining and then you're joining someone else's identity and you completely shed your own. I still remember in high school, I had two friends who were dating. They were so young. They were like 17. And they said, when we get married, we're going to come up with a new last name. And at the time, I thought it was so ridiculous. But now looking back, I'm like, that is brilliant. Because that is what, to me, that's emergent love. You still have your identities, but then you create this new joint identity together that is equal parts, both of you. So Dr. Sarr, I would just want to know, what are some of the structural changes we need to make for emergent love to happen?
Sure. Well, first of all, I don't think you're out of line by bringing that example. Also, we're talking about cultures here. If we can just open that door for a second. Mm-hmm. I'm coming from Iran. Many people think that, you know, a woman from Iran, how come you talk about sex? How come you talk about relationship, let alone offering a new model of love? What is happening, right? In Iran, we don't change last names. It's because of the patriarchal culture, it's very important for me to carry on with my father's last name. Hmm. In some other cultures in the region, in Middle Eastern, North African cultures, there are different segments that you even carry. Like, for example, it would be your first name and then the name of your father, your grandfather, and then the last name.
All the men.
All the men, exactly. And there are certain cultures that you only carry the mother's first name or the last name. So depending on what cultural value you attach to the names that you bring to the table, that could be a different conversation to be had. However, you have a point when you say the two of you come together and then you forge a third name. One of the reasons that people came up with that idea was not only for the woman to completely abide by the, you know, like by the husband's family and that lineage, but also legally speaking, it would be very difficult for a mother to take their child and exit the country when the last names don't match, or in a school system. It's getting better and better now that many people, you know, hold on to their own last name. But when you talk about the structural changes, those are the structural changes, the legal system, you know, in the legal and judiciary system, that we need to have an open mind and abide by a more open system to allow for that. Rather than that, you know, they will look down on your child if they have a long name. The mother's last name and the father's last name, for example. Or if they are going to go on a traveling trip with the parent who doesn't have the last name, you know, on the child, that they have to check the identities of the child, that are you sure you have the exit permission? What is happening here? So, you know, those are the structural changes that we're looking at.
Yeah.
Does that make sense?
Makes perfect sense. Also, I'm like, why does a kid have to take the man's last name? It's coming out of my body, so it should take my last name. But yes, that makes sense. But I think theoretically, what the emergent love does symbolize is creating this new last name, whether we have that in practice or not.
Yeah.
That's what I'm picturing.
We can let people that are way smarter than us do the legal system and figure that piece out. I think it's interesting, though, because I'm thinking back to like the other day and I was like really stressed of, you know, in general. And I remember like telling my partner, like, I feel like sometimes you don't understand me and don't take on some of this stress. Or like, you don't feel it too. And he's like, do you want me to be stressed? I'm like, no, I don't want you to be stressed. Like, he's like, I feel like I'm like not stressed because I'm trying to like keep it like, you know, first of all, I don't believe what you believe. Like, I believe you can do whatever you're trying to do. And then I'm like, oh, I can't argue with that. Like, he's just trying to support me. So I guess like when I'm thinking about this example with what you're saying, what I'm suggesting is more submergent love. And what he was suggesting is more emergent love of keeping our own kind of identities and feelings and ways of being separate, and then, you know, looking at our relationship. Are there other ways that like you can start to practice this, or like how do you get out of the old way? Like, speaking for a friend, aka myself, like how do I move out of this?
Sure. So I have a very specific exercise to give you and your partner.
Okay.
Try it. Let me know how it goes. And on that note, so one of the reasons that I did the research and then I followed through with the practicalities of the six ingredients for emergent love was exactly that. Because look, we have a lot of literacy nowadays. I know that I'm introducing a new model, like literally flipping love on its head, right? Yeah. So it's difficult for people to absorb, although, as you just mentioned, it does make sense.
Right.
But where has it been all this time, right? But I feel like, you know, with this model, hopefully people know that not only it's a new way of thinking, but also there's a new way of doing. So for example, the six ingredients that I'm introducing, if you know how they show up, how you define them, each of you in a partnership, in a relationship, then with the exercises that, you know, we can talk about, then you can abide by them and put them in practice, put your efforts where it matters, and then see the results, right? So for example, in that situation, what you were asking for, you wanted to be held. There's an exercise that I call framing. You come to your partner before you even start saying anything. And if you forget, your partner can do it for you. So you could come home and then in that scenario, say, I'm so pissed off. You know, this happened, that happened, right? To your partner. And then before you start with that, you say, you know what? I need to vent a little bit. Do you have it in you to listen? I just want you to listen. Can you hold the bucket for me so I can vomit? Can you do that for me? You know? So with that little framing, or your partner, he was actually trying, or she, I don't know who you're in the relationship. Yeah. He was trying to actually show up in the best way that he knew to keep it level-headed, to bring you down, to regulate you, right?
Yes.
So he tried to ask you in a way that, how do you want me to show up for you? And that's a good question to ask. Do you want me to hold you? Do you want to vomit? Here's the bucket. Do you want to complain? Do you want me to, like, you know, like give you solution? So if you can just frame that exercise of framing is so important in the interactions.
It's so funny because like I forget that all the time. But then like we've experienced this even in our Facebook group of like when people are looking for advice versus just want to vent. So it really is such a good way to do it. I think since you alluded to it, can we get into what these six ingredients are?
Sure.
And how do these, you know, correlate with emergent love?
Absolutely. So going back to the analogy of spark and log coming together in a conducive context, creating cozy fire, what are those ingredients in a relationship, right? If we can think of the six ingredients as that. One is attraction. One is respect. One is trust, one is compassion, one is shared vision, and one is loving behavior. And all of these need to be reciprocal and mutual. Not the same, but reciprocal and mutual. And then, so we can talk about them as how, because I know that, you know, these words people heard before, but the way that our research defined them are a little bit different.
Yeah, tell us. Please share.
So basically put, attraction is a renewable entity, while desire, including sexual attraction, right? They are fleeting. So attraction is what you value most, what you want to be around. Why do you want to be around your partner? And this could be your friend, this could be your child, this could be your coworker. Why do you want to be around something or someone? Respect. How do you keep each other's needs and priorities in mind? And how do you respect your own boundaries, your own self? Are you respectable? Are you respectful? Because many people come to me and say, my partner doesn't respect me. And then my question is, are you respectable? Yeah. And they're like, what do you mean? I'm like, do you walk all over your own boundaries?
That's profound. Yeah. Yes.
The other thing I have to say about boundaries, there's a culture of acquired narcissism these days. I need my space. Get the hell out. I'm against that. If you find yourself acting passive aggressive, pushing people out, asking for your space all the time, you're not doing a good job. But if you feel like you can own your boundaries, know where they are, again, know where you end, the other person begins. Remember that? And if you put your boundaries lovingly and firmly, then you're doing a good job. So that's important. Trust. Trust is very much linked to consistency and reliability. These are the two qualities that I want to point out. Trust has multiple aspects. When I talk about trust in North America and Western Europe, majority of people talk about, who cheated on whom? What happened? And then I'm like, well, what happens with emotional trust or the breach of it?
Yeah.
Financial,
yeah.
Social, physical. This is all trust, all over. But we just go to that one narrow aspect of trust. So that's another thing. I would love for people to expand their minds. When it comes to trust, we talk about integrity. How do you define integrity? That is culturally defined, by the way, because it's different definitions. The other thing about trust is commitment. What are you committing to when you don't feel like it? And that's the most important part. Because when we are lovey-dovey, I'm committed to you and everything we agreed and discussed. But when I don't quite like you, then what is the line that I'm not crossing?
Yeah.
Compassion. I invite people to think about compassion as being there for the other person, while empathy is being there with the other person. Mm. The example that you gave, Julia.
Yeah.
Right? If you show up with compassion, you're there for the other person without making it about yourself. Empathy has a great space in a relationship, especially in an erotic space. Erotic empathy is beautifully done. You literally resonate at the nervous system level with each other. But when it becomes too much and all the time in every interaction, it's horrible for coupledom and any other relationship.
Absolutely. I think empathy is so overused in everything we do. I think compassion
definitely
is much more important than empathy.
Mm-hmm. I want to dive into this even more, but before we do, let's take a quick break to hear from our partners.
Want relationship advice from one of the leading experts in the field of couples therapy? Then Reimagining Love is for you. Hosted by one of our favorite guests on Dateable, Dr. Alexandra Solomon. She is a clinical psychologist, couples therapist, professor, and award-winning author. It is your destination for profound, enlightening discussions about love, family, intimacy, and everything in between. But more than that, she gives us the opportunity to reimagine ourselves, our relationships, and our world. So on the show, Dr. Alexandra gives in-depth research-backed takes on topics like dating, jealousy, communication, commitment, personal growth, and features notable guests from the worlds of therapy, academia, and pop culture, such as me and Julie from Dateable, among other people you may have heard of like Esther Perel, Susan Cain, and Emily Nagoski. Her podcast is incredible, definitely worth a listen. We loved being on it, and we love having Dr. Alexandra on our show. So you can find her podcast, Reimagining Love, wherever you get your podcasts.
How do you define it, Yue?
Well, I think compassion, exactly. It's showing up for someone, but you don't necessarily have to feel their feelings.
Right.
You don't have to know what it's like to walk in their shoes, but you can show up with a heart that is holding space for them. I think that's compassion.
That's beautiful. Beautiful. So the example that I give for my couples, just to make it more visual for them, is I say, if I come to you and say, I'm bleeding. And you say, oh, you're bleeding? I am so sorry. I can't keep it together. Are you okay? Am I okay? Are we okay? So that's one. The other one is, I'm bleeding. Oh, you're bleeding? I'm gushing. So that's another thing. It's stealing the thunder from the other person. And if this is happening, then who is bringing the band-aid? Who is helping calm?
Right.
Really, you know?
So I see the really clear connection on that one to emergent love, like the empathy versus compassion. I think the one I'm struggling with a little is like the trust and consistency and reliability. Like, how is that different from emergent love versus submergent when you're together all the time and becoming one, all that?
I'll give you a very clear example, my love. In submergent love, when you abide by this model of trust, that you trust that my assumptions about you and the relationship is correct, I'm not going to ask you because I'm supposed to know.
I see.
Right? I don't trust that you can protect yourself. I don't trust that you have a voice beyond what I know of you.
I see. What about attraction? I mean, this is just so fascinating to understand like what the line is that's so different about these.
Sure. With attraction, you are in a way, you lose the sight of yourself. Usually we are attracted to another person because either by default, so the blueprint that we grew up with, right? That attraction, we want to be around something that is familiar. Or we want to be far from something that is familiar because we know that that didn't serve us. So usually people are polarized around attraction. Now, desire is very instinctual. You know, desire like, I wake up today, I want this for breakfast rather than that, right? But attraction is socially constructed for the most part, because it has to make me feel good about me. It has to make me feel seen, safe in a way, right? And also something that helps me, depending on what ticks you. So for example, for me, intellectual attraction is the most important thing in my life. Mm. For another person, sexual attraction, physical attraction is the most important thing for them. For another person, financial. So as long as people know what is the most for them, by the way, they change over time. Mm-hmm. That is, you know, important too, because it's socially constructed. So when we talk about submergent versus emergent love, as entities, as human entities, majority of us grow and change. Some people are stagnant, but there are very few. Many of us grow and change. As we grow and change, in emergent love, I invite people to change that attraction, initial attraction that brought them together, into intimacy.
I see. Okay.
Into me, I see. Into me, you see. And we keep doing this dance as we grow over a period of time. And there is not a moment when you are with another human being that you could be bored, because they are growing, I'm growing too, right? Unless we stop doing the work. So that's emergent love. In submergent love, there's no growth. 1 + 1 = 1, happily ever after. Where are we going?
Right.
And then one day you wake up and you're like, why do I not feel the same pull of attraction that I did when we first started dating?
Yeah. I mean, I think that one's the most clear cut. Yes. I think in submergent love, there's desire, and you always hold on to that initial desire. But like you said, desire is fleeting. So when the desire and the infatuation is gone, what do you have left?
Yeah. And then that couple that you referenced at the beginning of our call, that I love them, but I'm not in love with them. Maybe he's not the right person. Yeah. So on that note, do you want me to go to the last two?
Or yeah. Yes, please.
Just want to make sure that, you know, we are leaving with the whole thing.
This is helpful to us to, like, you know, put it all together.
And to summarize, we just had attraction, respect, trust, compassion, and two more.
Yes. Thank you. Great memory. So the next one is shared vision. That where are you committed to go yourself, and where are you committed to go, you know, together? Mm. And commitment, again, is a big part of this, because with shared vision, if you're not committed to put priorities behind your resources to meet that shared vision, then you're not really committed to that vision for yourself and the other person. And the last but not least is the loving behaviors that has that quality of going out of your way, giving benefit of the doubt, making each other feel special and celebrated, not only just licking each other's wounds, but celebrate each other for something that you're proud of, for something that you want to be seen for. So those are the six ingredients.
I love the six ingredients. I think it's very actionable for people to hear. I'm curious why love is not on the list. Is that just a given that you have love?
How do you define love?
I don't know, actually. I'm like, maybe love is all these six ingredients. To me, love is, I defined it so well on this other podcast. It's like, I need to remember that definition. But basically, it is this respect for the other person, that respect in the growth of this other person. That's how I defined it before.
Fantastic. So the high regard that you have for the person, yeah? Mm-hmm. That's why you give them benefit of the doubt. Love in the emergent love model, that's why this is a new model, right? So love can only exist and emerge as all of these six ingredients in a continual way, they are dancing together and they are mixing together on a daily basis. There are phases in life and seasons in life that you need to sprinkle a little bit more compassion, a little bit more respect. And that's okay. That's why I call them ingredients, not pillars that are set in stone. Right? So, yeah, but when you take one of them away, the fire dies. And that's my whole point. Hmm. That's my whole thing, that, you know, couples come to me and say, I love them, but I'm not in love with them. And they can't even put their fingers on what is this. And that's not intentional. That's, again, leaving it to chances and, you know, what is happening.
Well, I think that's the point. In your book, you said about it, like, you know, that we think that we see a fall in love. We need to meet that person, fall head over heels for them, and then everything else will just work out. We think of like dating as the active and being in a relationship as a passive. Like once you found it, it's all good. And you're basically turning that over, if I'm understanding correctly, and being like, actually, in order to have love, you need to be actively doing these six things.
Yes, absolutely. And now I'm assuming that your audience is morely dateables.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's a very, like, a question I want to get to is, like, how does this lead our audience? Like, we're probably majority dating or into, like, relatively new relationships, figuring it out.
Yeah.
I guess from your perspective, like, how do you take all this into dating? Because I would imagine it might be difficult on a first date to necessarily, like, see, like, one, does someone have the capacity for all this? And then clearly, like, you're just not having the time to do all these ingredients.
Ooh, I love that. Okay, let's dig in, shall we?
Yes, please. Yeah.
The first exercise. Okay, so when I was writing this book, it was actually really interesting. I had the best editor in the whole entire world. So as I was talking to her, she said, well, why do you want to include a whole section on individuals? I said, well, because in relationships, it includes individuals, right? I actually call the chapter What We Bring to Love. Now, I can offer some exercises that people can do right now as they are listening to us. Think about it and then really spend time to understand yourself. Again, remember, into me, I see. If you don't see yourself, into me, I see, you cannot invite other people to be around you, you know, like with those loving and firm boundaries. Now, for dating people out there, I would love you to carve some time, sit down with yourself when you are not hungry, angry, tired, high, like, you know, drunk, whatever. I want you
or
to
maybe
feel...
when you are high.
No, please, please don't be high. No, no, no. There's a reason, scientific reason. I want you to be in your best sober mind but feel good about yourself, not just had a big meal or hungry, you know that. Sit down with yourself and really go deep down. Think, what are your quirks? And quirks are the things that make you cute and adorable and you, right? And usually people have a hard time with that list because they don't know what they are. So if I'm humming all the time, you are the person who is hearing it, not me.
Yeah.
If I'm making clicking sound, I might not know it.
Oh, I was definitely in a relationship introduced to my quirks that I never knew I had. That's for sure.
So that's important to know. So quirks, you need to know. For that, you can actually go around and ask people, is there anything that is very specific me that you're noticing? Your parents, sibling, you know, co-workers, whatever. So that's one, quirks. Second one is pet peeves. What are the things that send a tingling sensation down your spine? Somebody spitting, loud noise, swearing, somebody chewing with their mouth open, whatever, mannerism, whatever that is your pet peeve, right? And third is sensitivities. Sensitivities are the ones that, because sometimes it looks like having a chip on your shoulder. So based on previous experience, predispositions, maybe you're neurodiverse, maybe, like, you know, for whatever reason, you might be a little bit more sensitive than your average person. It could be based on, you know, around trust. It could be around sounds. It could be anything. Sensitivities is more than any of those things, quirks and pet peeves, right? Be clear about those and then introduce them to the person that you're dating too. As you are assessing your compatibility, think about it. There are certain things that you can change about the person. So for example, you can teach them about table manners so they chew with their mouth closed. But if they have certain things, characteristics that are your pet peeves, your sensitivities, don't fall for them. Don't continue. Don't come back to me and say that, well, he's not my type because I didn't feel sexual chemistry to them. No, that's not good enough for me. But if you come back to me and say that, you know what, this person has a job that takes them to around the world, for example, on a monthly basis, and I have trust issues, sensitivity is my thing, you know, around trust, then don't get involved.
Right, because I could see that falling into the model you talked about earlier, where it's kind of like we're only a relationship after everything else.
Exactly. And also, if trust is your issue and your partner is traveling all around the world and you are at home and, you know, later on, maybe with a couple of kids, it's not going to go well for you. Or you know a person who is not consistent with their communications and they are dropping the ball. They're not like, you know, they don't even know when they're dropping the ball and they're not consistent. That's not the person for you if your sensitivity is trust, for example.
So is it thinking about these six ingredients, like even when you're single, of like what they mean to you? Is that kind of the way to approach this before you actually meet someone?
I highly recommend people to get their hands on the book, not because it's my book, but honestly, because that's why I gave building blocks in the book. You need to know your blueprints. You need to know what you're attracted to in all of these six ingredients. And there are certain people that keep repeating the same pattern.
Yeah.
We need to break that pattern for you to be able to be in the loving relationship that you desire and deserve. And here are the exercises that you can do.
I mean, I think for me, trust was a huge one. And that's like consistency in actions was something I prioritized for the first time ever in dating when I met my partner. Like that was a huge thing. That was, again, always not something I thought about when looking for a partner. So I can see how this stuff plays out.
Yes.
I'm glad. And by the sound of it, you know, in this current relationship, you're doing okay around that?
Yeah, absolutely. I think that was like something that always felt strong of the consistency. And, you know, like, I think for me, I came from like an on again, off again relationship where I was like, never again. So it is understanding like what isn't going to work for you too, and like bringing stuff to the forefront. Like, I think it was something like, I was like, oh yeah, in theory, I think like all the six, like, it's like, oh yeah, of course we need attraction. Of course we need respect. But people don't really think about like, what does that actually mean? And like, what does that mean to me? So I think that I love how you're like reframing these to go a little deeper than just like the status quo on them and make them more personalized.
Yeah, I'm glad that it resonates and you're a living example of that. You need to know what matters to you first. And I know that a lot of people, and that pains me, they put so much effort where it doesn't matter.
Right.
So, you know, now that we have the science, we have the research, let's see where to put. You know, this was based on like three huge pieces of research to assess people's thinking styles. You know, 150 couples who self-identified as thriving and 312 couples that I worked with individually to see what are the themes that are actually emerging. So these are the ones that I really would love people to really give it a chance. You know, Einstein said, we can't solve a problem with the same frame of mind that created it. Mm-hmm. We have to think of it anew to be able to solve that problem. And hopefully this is a part of the solution.
And to that, you know, we hope that people read your book and then they are part of this new emergent love model. But what happens when you're in early stages of dating, maybe you've read the book and the other person hasn't. How do you bring up the six ingredients and this new way of thinking about love?
Mm-hmm. So first of all, I feel like when you are very comfortable as where you are with your boundaries, lovingly and firmly, then you can very easily say that, well, the other person is dating too. So it's not like they are in a different phase, right?
Right.
You can actually say that, look, you know, I came across these definitions of trust, consistency, and reliability. And I'm actually thinking in my previous relationships, I really valued consistency. So even if when the person was not available, the communication remained consistent. Mm-hmm. I could rely on the person to come back to me. And that matters to me a lot. You know, so I feel like, you know, when the other person is not familiar with it, you first create the shared language with them, shared understanding. That's another issue. I'm so glad you brought this up, Yue. Very glad you brought it up, because that's another issue that I had. Couples would come and say, I might come to you and say, I love you. And you might come to say, I love you. I trust you. I trust you. But do we mean the same thing?
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm,
so creating shared understanding, shared language around these huge concepts like compassion and trust, data. We need to know what we mean. How does it look like in real life?
Well, like the fact that you asked me what love is, how I would define love, I guess that's something I've never asked someone I was dating.
Yeah.
How would you define love and how do you know when you are in love?
And do you know why? Actually, Simon May has a very good book. He's a philosopher in the UK. He talks about when we equate love with the divine force, we don't even allow ourselves to think of it as anything less. So we can't even scrutinize this concept. Love is so sacred. Mm-hmm. But yet we are dying to get it, to create it, to live by it, to be inspired by it. We need to know what it is.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I want to go into like takeaways from this whole conversation, but I guess the last question for you is, you know, I think I definitely fell into this. It's like once you meet the person, it's going to be, you know, easy. And I did the hard work of dating. Everything else will fall in place because I'm in love. And what I'm hearing, obviously, is no, that is not the case. And I can tell you 3 years into a relationship, I understand now that is not the case. But it was a little jarring at first. And I could hear people, our listeners, being like, okay, so I'm putting all this work into dating. And now I have to get into a relationship and put more work. How do you like reframe this to effort opposed to work? Or do you actually believe relationships are work?
I would say relationships are works that are worth it. Look, I've been married for 24 years.
Wow.
Was it easy? Was it a piece of cake? Was it bridging the cross like Cinderella and happily ever after? No, please no.
Yeah.
But I learned so much. I grew so much and I'm so proud. Because every day that I fell down and I'm like, oh my God, you know, I listen to these. I stop thinking that submerged in love is the model to abide by. It was painful. It took me years of therapy to get to know me. What are my essences? What are my values? What do I want to be around? Is it because I'm escaping from whatever that I came from? Or is it because I'm running towards something that I think should be my ideal? Mm. So it's constant work, but it's good pain. It's growing pain, you know?
Yeah.
So it's not, when we say work, it's like the relationships or marriages are used to be. I want to think that before this book, there were used to be jobs without job descriptions, but now we have the job description, you know?
Yeah, I think it's also like reframing work too, because if you don't go in with the model of like, I'm going to actually work on these ingredients, then you're going to work when there's challenges that arise. So personally, yeah. I would rather put in the work to, you know, understand each other's needs around compassion than to like try to pick up something that's broken or that isn't in a good mm-hmm. place. So I think it's just...
Or be reactive.
Yeah, exactly. It's like proactive versus reactive at the end of the day.
Absolutely.
I mean, I think this whole conversation has just been so eye-opening of just how you can really, you know, reimagine love with all this. I think the first takeaway I have, I guess just a side note, I didn't even know that you could have another friends with benefits that wasn't sexual. So that's a pure side note that I've been carrying on. But more importantly, I think the biggest takeaway I had was when we think of love, it's so hard to define, as we heard here. It's like, how do you actually put that into words? Like when you asked Yue, I was like, I don't know what I would say either, even though we have a podcast about love. It's so ambiguous and hard, mm-hmm. but I think at the end of the day, it is all the actions that happen from those six ingredients. So I think that really does, like, this pyramid is still staying with me of, you know, instead of like focusing on love, it's like getting love from all the everyday interactions and the way that you are with your partner. So I think reframing that, I know personally, I will actively look at like how are ways that, you know, I keep myself while building the relationship. I think that is so important because, you know, we all think that like subconsciously or consciously, like we're trying to get to this goal of meeting our person and falling in love. But I do think like once you get there, you can realize like, oh, shoot, like there was more to me. Where have I gone? Like if you don't keep your sense of self. So I think it is so important. If you want something that will sustain the long run, like a 20, 30 year marriage, like I'm 3 years in it, I can see the differences that have occurred. So it's like, it's a long haul game. So you have to have a strategy uh-huh. that's in line for the long haul.
Exactly. And on that note, Julie, actually, when you say 3 years into the relationship, you will qualify for the RPI, the Relationship Panoramic Inventory.
Oh, yes. I read about this. I want to do it.
I hope you do, because, you know, that's another thing that this is from my corporate years, that every year we had this review of the 360 review, asking all of these colleagues, how are we doing? Nah, nah, nah. And we don't have anything for relationships.
No. Mm-mm.
So to show us that, are we doing okay? What is it? Because every relationship shapes cracks.
Yes.
And if you mend them, again, attend to them, then they become place of growth. Mm. But if you don't, they become wedges.
Yeah.
And then you fall apart.
And like thinking about your ingredients, I think there's some areas where, you know, we have it really in an emergent love cycle, and that other areas might be a little more submergent or not fitting those ingredients. So it's a really good check of like what might need a little more tending.
Love it. I mean, the name of your book is Love by Design. So I think that says it all. My key takeaway is, in relationships and in early dating, we have to get on the same page with what we're trying to create. It's what you said, Dr. Sara, was creating the same language. What does love mean? What does compassion mean? What does respect mean? What does being there for each other mean? What are those actions? Let's really align on what that means. That could look different from relationship to relationship.
Exactly.
They can be very unique. So it is love by design. And I love the six ingredients can really be the guideline for how you define your language. I do think, though, that you do need submergent love to have emergent love. I think there needs to be an incubation period for couples to work on just them two.
I could
without
see that.
A carrier in the world. And it's kind of like the reality TV effect. You need that time without distractions to feel like you are one entity. But that's the womb, and that's the fetus in the womb. And then you have to birth that child into the world, into the real world. And that's the emergent love. And I think emergent love is such a key indicator of us evolving. We wouldn't be here if we weren't evolving the way we are. I mean, all of the other love models you talked about were dependent on resources.
Right.
Dependent on basic needs. Now we've got all that covered. We can emerge out of that and think about what is that next level. And that is creating a new entity with someone and thriving out of that relationship that's not just one entity or that's constrained by resources. So I really enjoy having this new way of thinking about love with the context that we are evolving as well. So this is long overdue. We really need a new way to think about how we operate in a relationship.
Yeah, absolutely. And you know, we are not satisfied by settling down anymore.
No.
We want to thrive.
Yep.
Marriages are not there to give our lives meanings. Marriages are there to enrich our lives or partnerships,
yes. Yep.
You know? So I think, yes, it's been long overdue. So, and I'm grateful for all the shoulders that came before me so I can stand on them to create this.
Yeah. You know, at the start of the episodes, we always like to like ask an overarching question. And for this one, it's like, do successful partnerships need more than love? And I think what I've gathered from this is it's still love. It's just how it's being built on love. It's like the ingredients here is defining love a little more than what we have ambiguously called love.
Yes, absolutely. So if I may just give you another analogy that might work for some people, the love, submergent love that we know of is like a sharp orange color. That's infatuation, that going down in that incubation that you're talking about, Yoe, right? So that sharp orange, that feels so good, infatuation. Emergent love, if you imagine all the colors of a rainbow, it's so deep. You have a peace of mind. You have a peace of heart. You're not preoccupied by anxiety of, oh my God, tomorrow, am I here? Is the partner is there? You know, like you actually start putting your energies towards building something together and giving to one another and the relationship rather than just constantly being preoccupied.
Yeah. That's really great.
I think it like goes back to that definition of love, because like when we think like all we need is love, it really is just infatuation. It's like it actually needs more, which are these building blocks.
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah.
And everybody can do it. Design their love life that they desire and deserve. They just need to make sure that they put their efforts where it matters.
Yes.
and take care of their own shit.
Yes.
Seriously, take care of your own. When you talked about the bubbles, the circles.
Yeah.
Like, yes, you got to take care of that circle first.
I'm definitely going to do that lead up thing that you were talking about of like the that is a huge framing. Piece of it.
Wonderful.
Framing. Yes.
That's wonderful. We can talk forever like about this.
And for anyone that wants to get a hold of your book, because we clearly just skimmed the surface, there's so much more. Where can they find you?
Well, the easiest way, I'm on Instagram, Dr. Sarah Nasserzadeh. And also, well, Instagram is for the, you know, like a boosts of tips. They can join the newsletter on the website to receive the resources. And for the book and also all these exercises that I talked about, some of them are actually on the website. It's called lovebydesignbook.com.
Great. We'll link it all in the show notes too.
Sure.
Fabulous. Thank you so much, Dr. Sarah, for being on Dateable, for imparting your wisdom and
thank you so
telling
much.
Us about a whole new way to look at relationships and designing the love that we've always wanted. And we want to thank our listeners as well for coming along for the ride. If you learned a thing or two, which we know you did, why don't you leave us a rating and review in Apple Podcasts, give us 5 stars, and in the body of your review, tell us what was the one learning that you had from this episode that you're going to take away to your dating life, your early relationships, your marriage maybe, or even just a relationship you have with someone non-romantically. I think it definitely applies as well. Okay, and with that, we're going to wrap up this episode.
Stay Dateable.
The Dateable podcast is part of the Frolic Media Network. Find more podcasts you'll love at frolic.media/podcasts. You can follow us on Instagram at Dateable Podcast and visit datablepodcast.com for access to all the episodes and our premium programs. Also, make sure to subscribe today if you haven't already on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or your favorite podcast platform so you are the first to get all the latest episodes. And most importantly, stay Dateable.